You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
December 17th, 2016. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola, and I'm broadcasting from the cold, cold Chicago suburbs. Thanks for joining me today on RBN. Their website is republicbroadcasting.org. View the guest lineup for this program at spingola.com. Just click on the radio schedule button and select the year, month, and day. Please also visit screensandyhook.net for articles about Sandy Hook, which reminds me that in memory of Sandy Hook 4 years ago on 12/14/2012, I hope that the listeners will read Shill Murray's article, Sandy Hook Elementary Was Open, Part 12, The Glass Display Cases, which he published on the 15th, a couple of days ago. His website is crisisactorsguild.com. He has posted massive amounts of really credible evidence, so I hope that you will look at that website. I also hope that you will subscribe to SpingolaSpeaks.net, where one may listen to the audio files of my programs, and of course the RBN archives are open. Another option is Wooly's blog, and that's wooly'sblog.blogspot.com. If you appreciate the RBN programming, please consider donating to the network. You may do that by calling 800-724-2719 or simply visit republicbroadcasting.org and click donate, or send donations to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Email questions or comments to comment@spingola.email. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website, or by visiting spingola.chatango.com. We will take calls in the third hour at 800-313-9443. My guest today is Michael Walsh. That's W-A-L-S-H. He is the author of numerous books. If you'll visit his website, spinfreehistory.com, just click on the word books, and you will see all of the books that he has published. It's amazing, and they're just all wonderful. Welcome, Michael.
Well, how are you, Deanna, and how are our American listeners? It's so good to be back with you all again. Well, I've missed you, and Europe has missed you.
Oh, well, I miss you, too. You know, I just have a once-a-week program, so I don't get to talk to you as often. But it's always an honor to have you on the program. And you are hours ahead of us, so I know that you're doing I couldn't do what you're doing. After 9 o'clock, I'm a zombie, so not really, but I'm an early morning riser, so.
Yeah, well, here in Western Europe, it's 10 p.m. at night. It's just as well I'm not speaking to you from Latvia, in which case it would be 11 o'clock. And had I been speaking to you from Moscow, where it's 16 degrees below, then it would have been midnight.
So oh, 10 my o'clock goodness. Is too bad.
Let's count our blessings. Everything is, just as it should be.
Sure. Well, your books are terrific. I've just been going through one of the latest ones, which is, let me tell you what it is, Death of a City, the book they don't want you to read. And I think that you could say that about all of your books. but when you see the devastation and read about it, and of course the victors who tell the story don't want you to read about what they have done and what they glory about, say, oh, this was the good war. There's no war that's good, because it kills innocent people. It kills a lot of people, destroys infrastructure, destroys history. It destroys what has been there for decades and decades of beautiful buildings. People's history is usually in buildings and what they've created, and some of the great buildings that were destroyed, not only in Hamburg, but in Dresden and elsewhere. It just breaks my heart. It just breaks my heart to think about it.
Yeah, these are the things that we see. We see the utter devastation. And I was talking with somebody today, Diana, and I said, well, how can you justify, as far as the eye can see, rural, or rather suburban Germany is a moonscape. Now, there's no factories. There's nothing there of any war importance, like shipbuilding yards or factories or anything like that. This is just where civilians lived, and it's totally been incinerated, as have the populations. And, you know, how can anybody justify that? I never liked Bolshevism. I've never liked Bolshevism in my life. But there is absolutely no way that I could justify in a war against the Soviet Union, not to be confused with Russia today, against the Soviet Union by incinerating the ordinary Russian people. And, you know, this is something that we don't often talk about. And the other thing, doing some great research with a team of good researchers, I get all the credit because my name is on the cover of the books, but I do have researchers who help me. And, you know, the Soviet Union, and they were all equally culpable, Diana. So we're not pointing the finger of blame at, say, the Soviet Union or the United States or Britain or France, but the Soviet Union alone removed 900,000, that's just short of a million, art treasures from the defeated Reich and sent them to Russia. These are all lost to Europe.
Wow.
It's unbelievable. 900,000, and that is the Soviet Union at all. There is there was one general, I think he was Marshal Zhukov, who used 4,000 German railway trucks to transport his personal loot to Russia. And do you know what he described it as? Oh, it's just a trifle, he said.
Oh,
4,000 wagons filled with fur coats, everything that they could lay their hands on in the defeated Reich. People's pianos, people's chandeliers, the contents of their wardrobe, totally stripped bare, and put into tens of thousands of German railway wagons, which again were never seen. These were used to transport prisoners to the Gulag. And he dismisses 4,000 railway wagons filled with loot out, just a trifle.
Wow. And of course, the Americans were plundering also.
Absolutely. You've got a lot of art treasures in San Francisco, the big art gallery there, and well, all over. Washington included, you've got a lot of the German artworks that are stored there. They call it reparations, of course. If the Germans did do it, which they did not, there is no evidence to suggest they did, then that, of course, is called looting. But when the United States, Britain and Russia and France do it, then, of course, that is reparations. So this is the hypocrisy of the victors. But that's the nature of them. You know, if they had a conscience, we wouldn't have a war in the first place, would we?
Right. How true. Well, even they ended, a lot of the loot ended up in private collections by the people that were doing the plundering. And when they see the generals doing it, it kind of gives everybody else license to steal also.
Oh, absolutely. They were encouraged to do it, and all of the Red Army troops were given a case. They were actually allowed a case full, a suitcase, you know, the sort of thing that I might travel from here to Chicago with. You know, they were allowed to take whatever stuff that they could lay their hands on. Well, when you consider how many Red Army troops were in Berlin and other parts of Germany and Austria, you know, it's just the raping and the plundering of a formerly great nation. How can you justify that?
Right. And, of course, they were also encouraged to rape all of the women, all the females.
Absolutely. 8 years old. Well, I'm afraid the children, the little boys, were ravished as well. You know, there was no stopping these people. They were absolutely disgusting. You know, so we need to remember all of the victims of the Allies. And not just the war, you know, I came across an interesting independent analysis, an American one actually, because it was the organization was based in Hawaii, and were constantly reminded of the, without any evidence, of course, of the 6 million that were supposed to have been exterminated by the Germans, without, of course, them providing any proof. But proven, without any doubt about it at all, in the last century, Diana, 170 million people have been murdered by government.
Yes.
And most of them are by the, what Hitler correctly described as two sides of the same coin, capitalism and communism. Communism, Bolshevism, which of course was inspired and invested in by Wall Street and the great American corporations, that has accounted for 70 to 100 million, mostly Christian, Orthodox Christian martyrs. So where does the 6 million stack up against this, Diana? Where does the 6 million stack up against 170 proven murdered by government, mostly capitalist and communist?
Well, whoever controls the cover story is going to promote something that is going to divert everyone's attention, the public's attention, from the real truth. And so if all you hear following the war is how evil the Germans were and how they did this and how they did that, then you know, they frame the debate right away, and that is what people remember and what people will focus on. Is 6 million. They're not going, nobody's talking about the millions, 170 million that were slaughtered and incinerated and raped and tortured. And when you read about the bombs that the Allies used, these were bombs that were incendiary. They created horrific heat. And, I mean, it was just, and they, of course, they did the same thing, in Japan, where they were bombing. But every single city, every single community in Germany that was 50,000, population or above, they bombed. It didn't matter, whether the community were manufacturing anything. If the population was 50,000 or above, they bombed those. After they finished bombing all of the communities that had that population, then they started bombing communities with a lesser population. They were not out to just stop Hitler. They were out to destroy Germans.
Well, you're absolutely right, and it was your own General Dwight D. Eisenhower who, according to the INS in Paris, which is a press bureau, he spoke to them and he said, "Our primary purpose is destruction of as many Germans as possible. I expect to destroy every German west of the Rhine and within the area that we are attacking. Now, this is talking about women and children. We're talking about non-combatants here. We're not talking about soldiers killing soldiers, Germans killing Americans, or the other way around, although somebody said to me the other day, in what way was the United States ever threatened by Germany? It was, you know, even if Germany had any designs upon the United States, they simply didn't have the means to threaten the United States in any way. So what are American troops doing, rampaging not just across Germany, of course, but across France? They caused a great deal more mayhem in France, the American army, and in Belgium, the Low Countries, than did the Germans. And as I've mentioned before, my mother was very, very left-wing and very, very anti-national socialist. She changed her mind as she got on in years. She mellowed a bit. But she was working in Belgium. About 1970, something like that. And, you know, being propaganda-led by what the Germans were supposed to have done during the occupation, she did say to an elderly Belgian lady, that must have been shocking, it must have been absolutely terrible during the German occupation here. And the old lady, my mother was quite surprised. The old lady spoke honestly. She said, no. She said, we never had a problem. She said, life went on very much as normal. It was only when the Americans arrived that, you know, our lives were turned into hell.
Wow.
You see, you see pictures of France, Paris, because of course all of France wasn't occupied. All the Germans did was occupy northern France to deny England a springboard into to create a second front, of course. So all the Channel ports were lost to the English. But one can quite easily these days, ignorance is, is something that you might prefer, but you can go onto Google and you can see life in Paris. It was a darn sight better in Paris during the German occupation than during the Islamic occupation. Life was very, very prosperous indeed, in Paris. And an American friend of mine, who's a good Jerry Fredericks, I hope he doesn't mind me mentioning his name.
It's too late now.
Too late now. Are we live? Oh my goodness, sorry Jerry. But Jerry is an assiduous investigator. And he wrote to many, many art galleries throughout Europe and the United States. He didn't reveal who he was, apart from his name and address, obviously. He didn't reveal his sympathies or anything of that nature. But he asked them, you know, for any evidence that the Germans had taken from their art galleries, their museums, or the other collections, any works of art. And not one of them was able to say that they had. But the most telling one, Diana, was the Louvre. The Louvre is probably one of the best known. It's not the biggest art gallery and museum in the world. The Prada takes the credit for that in Madrid. But the Louvre, of course, is very, very well known, internationally acclaimed. And he received, Jerry received a letter from the curator of the artworks in the Louvre, and he said no, he said there is the Germans never took any artworks whatsoever from the Louvre. Now the Germans were in occupation of Paris for 4 years. They had plenty of time to remove the artworks. Now, this raises the question, Diana, if the Germans in occupation of Paris for 4 years chose not to take any of the art treasures from the Louvre Museum and Art Gallery, why would they loot all of the others in Europe and Russia? It just doesn't make sense, does it? You're either a looter or you're not a looter.
Exactly. Yes.
You know, if you were sorry, but you carry on. I'm taking over your program.
No, go ahead. No, you're my guest. The guest always has sway.
So. Yeah, but there is so much history. But one of the interesting developments, and I do think that we perhaps might find a little bit of time to talk to about it, is Diana. We are working for the better. We are alternative media, and as Julian Assange says, it is the alternative media that is burning conventional media to the ground. They're on the ropes, aren't they? Media, the American media is a figure of fun throughout the world. You just go on Facebook and it's covered with very amusing memes about the CBS and all the rest of it. They're made a mockery of themselves.
Absolutely. All righty. We'll be right back in 3 minutes. All righty. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Michael Walsh. And that's W-A-L-S-H. And please feel free to visit his website, spinfreehistory.com. I love that. That is just such a perfect name for a website and for your website. Spin Free History. That's great. I love that. Are you there? Ah, somebody took a break. Or is, let's see. Okay, yeah, he's still there. Okay. Well, anyway, I was going to, mention, when we came back about the propaganda that the U.S. government, put out. They had a magazine called Stars and Stripes. And, they, although they didn't encourage rape, just the fact that some of the things that they suggested and implied would give the GI the idea that it was okay. We're still live. I'm not sure why you can't hear me, Michael. He can hear. Okay. Did you mute your mic or okay, we'll try and call him back. Okay. He did mention that that they were having some storms. Maybe there's a storm related issue with the technology there. But anyway, a GI, they would go into, well, we were talking about France. They would go into France and pay for sexual service from French women, and this put the French man into a subservient position, in France, and French men would kind of have to acknowledge their decreasing power, and rape really changed the GI from a vigilant liberator to a brutal invader. And Stars and Stripes is something that, that Eisenhower used, and he would have pictures printed, published, to support his views of what was going on. I think we have Michael back.
Yes, we are. I don't know what happened here. We're having pretty bad storms here in Mediterranean Spain, and I hope it doesn't disrupt our conversation at all.
Yeah, I'm sorry you're having that situation, but we were talking about rape and about Stars and Stripes, the propaganda magazine that was published by the U.S. government. And actually, Eisenhower sent in French colonial troops under his command, and they raped about 2,000 German women in Stuttgart. And the U.S. government did a lot of propaganda via that magazine, Stars and Stripes. So.
Yeah, that's pretty much correct. But as I was saying just before the break, is that it's all coming out in the wash now, and only 77% of American people believe have any trust in the media. But I'm trying to encourage people to start using radio stations like your own and, Renegade Tribune, and just look to alternative media and emigrate away from the toxic mainstream media, which is an absolute disgrace now and can no longer be trusted.
Oh, it hasn't. We've not been able to trust the mainstream media for decades, but it just seems to be getting so ridiculous now that anybody should be able to discern that it's just a bunch of garbage. I mean, it's getting ridiculous.
It's just trivia all the time, isn't it? And they're making fools of themselves. And people, when they're panicking, you know, the media in this case, you know, they tend to be making matters worse for them, and they're painting themselves into a corner. And, you know, this really is not the way out. And, you know, maybe with Trump taking office on the 20th of January, maybe we'll see a change, or maybe they will just wake up to the fact that they are being ridiculed, the media, the American media, and the British media, by the way, and the German media. They're being ridiculed right throughout the world, and, you know, they've brought it on themselves.
Indeed. All right, we're going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Today is Michael Walsh, the author of a lot of books, and they are available at Amazon, and you can see the titles at spinfreehistory.com. Do you have a favorite book that you've written, or no?
Yeah, quite a surprising one, actually. Well, I've got several. I love them all. It's like, it's a little like saying to a mother, you know, which of your children do you love the best? But, obviously, Witness to History was my baby, and it is still a big seller. It took me 20 years to write that to publication scale. So it's quite a book, and, I'm very, very pleased that it is as popular as it is. It's the most popular of the Wright books, but it was quite a surprise. As you know, I'm virulently anti-Bolshevik and pro-Russia, by the way, but I hate the Bolsheviks. They did to Russia what the NATO is doing to Syria. They totally destroyed and destroyed the people. But when I started writing Trotsky's White Negroes, this was a description given by Leon Trotsky of the white slaves, the Orthodox Christians who were going to be harnessed to the plows forevermore. And he meant it. He described us as his white Negroes, and the plantation was going to go from the Baltic Sea right to where you can gaze across at Alaska. What a plantation, hey? Anyway, I started writing that because what I wanted to do was to prove beyond all doubt whatsoever that it was the Wall Street bankers who financed the overthrow, the regime change of Imperial Russia. They stole the greatest gold reserves and artworks in the history of the world, and they colonized, they provided a quasi-government of Bolsheviks, mostly Jews, to manage the godforsaken Bolshevik-occupied Russia. So Trotsky's White Negroes, I didn't think it would be a big seller, but in actual fact it is outselling, apart from Witness to History, Diana, it's outselling all of the books, which is a very pleasant surprise. It really is selling very, very well. So that's Trotsky's White Negroes. Have a look at it on Amazon, and you'll see for yourself why it is so popular.
That is really amazing. Well, it's not amazing, but I think the title would provoke people to purchase it just to see what you would be talking about. Because I think a lot of people just are unaware of the slavery. Well, they took a lot of people into slavery before the World War II, and as soon as they took over. They had the gulags. They were sending the whole families, whole villages to work and slave. Oh, it was terrible to hear about there, to read about the what they were doing in the camps. I mean, they were, it was awful. No shelter, hardly anything to eat. Just, you just died working. You wore your life out working.
Well, you know, life was worthless. In the book, and in the articles that I do, of course, you know, there was the number of churches, places of worship in Russia, Imperial Russia, Tsarist Russia, before the Bolsheviks took over. And we're talking about hundreds of thousands of churches, and these all disappeared, but not one synagogue was ever touched.
No.
And Leon Trotsky, of course, was a personal friend of the Jewish bankers. He lived the good life while he was in New York. Then he went to Canada, and from there he was shipped to Russia to carry on his work. And this is where he said, and this is proven, we have the sources, absolutely everything about it, is this was Trotsky's words: "We must turn Russia into a desert populated by white Negroes upon whom we shall impose a tyranny such as the most terrible Eastern despots never dreamed of. The only difference is that this will be a left-wing tyranny, not a right-wing tyranny. It will be a red tyranny and not a white one. We mean the word red literally, because we shall shed such floods of blood as will make all the human losses suffered in the capitalist wars pale by comparison." And he added to that, "The biggest bankers across the ocean," that's the United States, "will work in the closest possible contact with us. If we do win the revolution, we shall establish the power of Zionism upon the wreckage of the revolution's funeral, and we shall become a power before which the whole world will sink to its knees. We shall show what real power is by means of terror and bloodbaths. We shall reduce the Russian intelligentsia," that's the middle class, "to a state of complete stupefaction and idiocy and an animal-like existence." This was Trotsky speaking in Petrograd in December 1917 to fellow revolutionaries. There is no doubt about the source of it or the validity of what he said. And yet if you go on Wikipedia, it just says that Trotsky was a politician and a revolutionary. Nothing at all about him, you know, nothing at all about him.
Oh my gosh.
Yep. Yeah, the whitewash. The whitewash. Don't go onto Wikipedia about anything to do with communism, the people, the Bolsheviks, or the Third Reich, because it's all been laundered in Israel before it's published by Wikipedia. You're just wasting your time.
Oh, okay. Well, I think that people recognize that Wikipedia is biased and, as you say, whitewashed.
Yeah, Trotsky's White Negroes is a very, very important book, and it's an important book, Diana, in as much as it will change everybody's perceptions. I don't care whether they're Republican or Democrat, liberal, communist, fascist, or whatever. It will change. This is one book that will change perceptions, and it is proven to do so. It's not my opinion. I rely largely in my research on quoting the people who do matter. Nobody's really interested in what Michael Walsh has got to say, but we want to hear what Trotsky has got to say. We want to hear what Lenin and Stalin has got to say. Well, it's in the book. You know, argue with them. Don't argue with me. I'm just the messenger. Don't shoot the messenger.
And that's what was so appealing to Witness to History. And that's the first book that I read, and I got it, you know, several years ago, and then tried to find you. And I just, it was just amazing to go through all of these things that, I mean, it was just amazing to me. And it was so revealing, so eye-opening. And I've come a long way since then. Hopefully that, you know, we can all learn from what we've believed previously and recognize truth when we hear it or read it. So what would be your next... Oh, we can't say favorite. But what other, let's see. There's something I'd like to ask you. I'm not sure that you've covered it. But I have a friend who has read about what he says is Hitler's euthanasia program for people who were not perfect, who had, you know, problems, physical and mental problems. Do you know anything about that?
Only a little bit, simply because there isn't an awful lot to tell. The fact is it was pure propaganda. All he did, in actual fact, was to propose to do to those who, are, how can I put it, disadvantaged. mentally disadvantaged. The United States, long before Hitler, they had a program in which those who were mentally disadvantaged were not allowed to reproduce, so did Britain. So all he was proposing to do was to, was exactly the same policy as was always already being carried out in the United States and Britain. And this was to impose restrictions on those who, if they were to conceive, were going to cause immense damage to the normal stock, the normal human stock of the nation. This is normal. People, they do it these days. There's very few countries who don't. For instance, not many people realize or know that in Spain today, I don't think they've changed the law, but there is no law against incest in Spain. So a brother can, you know, live with his sister without a problem. A father can live with his daughter without a problem. It's just not a problem in Spain.
But oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's no kidding. They've only just changed the law in Spain now. Until very recently, I think it was if you were under 26, you could marry a 13-year-old girl. But I think they've changed that now to 16 years old. But in the, you know, what we read, for the large part, I would say 99%, read it with tongue-in-cheek. Hitler's Germany had no, watch my lips, they had no policy of extermination of any kind against people who were mentally or physically disabled. As a matter of fact, they were so concerned about the formidable challenges that already faced these people that they looked after them at Darnside better than they do in the West, for instance. In Britain, I think the United States, women very, very often are engaged in very heavy physical work in agriculture and in the factories. There is no law against it. But in Germany, there was a law against it, and it was the, they were the first country also to not only outlaw euthanasia, but to outlaw any form of animal cruelty whatsoever, certainly
exactly.
Against vivisection. So are we expected to believe that a country that made it unnecessary for women, because purely not because they were discriminatory against women, women are just physically not as strong as males. You know, that's the same whether we're talking about the animal world. You know, the male is stronger. So women were discouraged from working in any occupations that were demanding of great physical strength. These were men's occupations, and of course there were opportunities opened for the women that were more appropriate to their stature. As I said, they were the first to outlaw euthanasia. They were the first to outlaw the vivisection. Are we expected really to believe that a country that was humane enough to bring in legislation that would make it an offence to be cruel to any animal would actually put to death people who were born with a limp or a mental problem? It just doesn't add up, does it? It doesn't stack up. And of course, it's not true. If you ask them for evidence of it, they cannot provide any credible evidence whatsoever of the Russians being involved in the Trump election or of the Germans killing off people who had a limp or a mental problem.
Indeed. Yes, sad about the animals. I mean, they were very, very humane, country. And even humane towards people who had offended them, had hurt them. I mean, it was just... they were just a good people.
Yeah, it's a fact of life. The Hitler's Germany, the government and Hitler himself was regarded more highly. There wasn't much in it, but they were regarded more highly by the women of Germany. Now, the women of Germany are very moral. They're very Christian. And they made wonderful mothers. Are we really expected to believe that a country that attracted the support of the women folk of that great country would consider even for a moment putting to death people who had any form of disability. It just doesn't add up, does it? And of course it doesn't add up simply because it's simply not true. It's the victor's propaganda. And this is why I am so pleased, so passionate about alternative media. Yes, people do read in the tens of millions. They switch on the television, they listen to the radio, they read the newspapers, but they're not doing it for the news. They're doing it for entertainment. They're doing it for game shows, for sport, for fashion, for the latest menus, but they're not doing it for the news. If they want the news, they're coming to us, and they're quite rightly so.
Indeed. You also had, you did a book. Thank you for answering that question. And thank you for those points that you brought up. Anyway, you did a book, The Program of the NSDAP, a Blueprint for National Survival, which is very good. So could you talk a little bit about that and what the program...
Gottfried Feder, Adolf Hitler, of course, gets the credit or the blame, whichever you prefer, is for creating National Socialist Germany, but in actual fact, it is highly unlikely that he would have succeeded, or National Socialism wouldn't have been as successful as it was, had it not been the blueprint for national survival and revival that was written entirely by Gottfried Feder. So, if you are going to make a car, and if your name is, Ford, you're going to get the credit for it, and the name Ford is going to be on the front of the cars. But if in actual fact we found out that somebody else actually invented and designed the car, their name is not going to appear on the front of the car. It's going to be Ford because he's the maker, or it's going to be Mercedes, or whatever the case may be, Austin in Britain. But in actual fact, Gottfried Feder was the man who created the blueprint, the economic blueprint for the National Socialist State. And what I find intriguing about it when I was researching this book and editing it is that if you were to take this program of the NSDAP and make it into the program of the United States or Libya or Syria or Russia, it would work equally well. It is a blueprint for putting your economy back on track. And this is what Gottfried Feder's program of the NSDAP did. It gave Hitler's Germany, the NSDAP party, the economic blueprint for creating the enormous wealth that it did. Now, when you consider that Germany in January 1933, when Hitler was first elected, he was elected twice, Germany then was in such a terrible state, well, not even Ukraine is in such a dire strait
as now. Michael, we have to go to a real quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Excuse me. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest is Michael Walsh, and his website is spinfreehistory.com. All righty. We were talking about the NSDAP, Feder's program, it's F-E-D-E-R, and it would work anywhere because it just was amazing. If you read through it, I mean, it's just amazing. And particularly, I mean, they set, the farmers, that is the, they focused on helping the farmers and removing the economic, the middleman, instead of the farmer selling to a middleman that made most of the money while the farmer did all the work, they removed that middleman. It was just terrific. The whole program was wonderful.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And Germany was laboring under the same economic bricks around their neck when they were trying to swim as all Americans are today. And I think we discussed this before, Deanna, is that when Americans or Germans or Britons go out to buy anything, it might be a local authority, they want a new fire station or they want a new school, or you want a new dress, or a family member needs a new pair of shoes, whatever you pay for it, somewhere in the manufacturing process, the banks have added 40% to the value of that purchase. So if your pair of shoes are, for instance, $30, then 40% of that has gone to the banks, and they don't produce anything at all. They are only number crunchers. Whatever you buy for $100, the banks have taken $40. So everything that you buy is 40% more expensive than it should be. Now, in Hitler's Germany, according to the program of the NSDAP, they removed the banks from the equation, so that when you bought something for $100,000 Reichsmarks or dollars or pounds, whatever the case may be, that's what it cost to actually produce. So this, of course, instantly made National Socialist Germany 40% better off. Everybody was 40% better off. The country prospered, and of course, this meant that the capitalist West, which was laboring under the 40% bankers' interest, had to stop it simply because they couldn't compete with it. It'd be like, for instance, you open a restaurant on the high street in anywhere in America, but your prices, because you don't borrow any money from the banks, are 40% lower than the other restaurants. Now, the other restaurants have either got to close or they've got to put you out of business, and that's precisely what they did with Germany. They put it out of business, and this is what Winston Churchill conceded after the war. It had nothing to do with Hitler. It didn't matter whether Hitler, if Germany was run by a Jesuit priest. You know, it had to be stopped because it was an economic competitor, a trade competitor to the United States and Britain, and it was for that reason. But people will not go to war, they will not sacrifice their sons, they will not sacrifice their lives for a trade war, so we tell them that Hitler's Germany is going to take over the world, is going to destroy us all. So people put on their uniforms and they go and do what they're told.
Exactly. I can't believe we're at the top of the hour already. We will be back in 3 minutes with our wonderful guests. So stay with us.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Guest today is Michael Walsh. That's W-A-L-S-H. His website is spinfreehistory.com, and his books are available. You can see the titles of his books at spinfreehistory.com, and then you can get them from Amazon. He's written a lot of books. As I mentioned, we'll take calls in the third hour at 800-313-9443, and we invite you to visit the chat room, which is always very friendly, and that is spingola.chatango.com. All right, we were talking about the... Yes, you're right. The program. I mean, it wouldn't matter who was leading Germany. In fact, Germany was a target before Hitler was ever born. Germany was a target. They've always been a target. Ever since the Marxist Revolution, 1848-49. But this economic program of the NSDAP was a pamphlet that was issued around May of 1932, and NSDAP issued these pamphlets so that people could understand exactly, okay, what are we for? What are we going to get if we sponsor, if we encourage, if we endorse this party? They knew exactly what they were going to get, which is different than the elections now. All you get is character assassinations on both sides. But anyway, welcome back.
Yeah, I think things have got to change for the future, and I think we are going through a revolution in thought, and I think it's being imposed upon us by outside forces. I did see a very good meme on social media earlier on, and that is that the global new world order is in a period of collapse, simply because I think what we've had is for the last two, perhaps 4,000 years, everything that we've acquired has been acquired by force of arms. It's been nations and empires conquering others and stealing everything that they've got.
Yes.
I've always said this, even though I was born in Britain myself, let's be practical about it. If you want a picture of Britain that will add up, then imagine it. It's quite a long island and a narrow island. So try a picture of Britain in your imagination, but think of it as a pirate ship, with the main mast being London, which is more or less the lower centre of Britain, if that doesn't sound too Irish. And on that mast is flying the pirate's flag. And basically, Britain, I think there are 222 countries in the world, and Britain has invaded 90% of them.
Yeah.
It was 1776 when the United States came about, and I think it's something like 95% of that time America has been at war with somebody. And of course this is why America is great, because they've been plundering the wealth of all of those other countries for the last 200 years. I think this is all changing, and I think we're going through, as I say, it was a German statesman who invented the term of the revolution in thought. And what we need to do in the future, instead of stealing things from other people, we need to start bartering. The United States has got so much that the world desperately needs. And of course the world has so much that the United States needs. But instead of stealing it, why not just barter it, exchange it, swap it? That's what China and Russia are doing. This is what America has got to do, and Britain, and NATO. Instead of stealing other people's property, get used to it, start buying it, doing what we do. So when you and I, Diana, we go to the supermarket, we buy our produce, we go to the checkout, and we pay for it, we don't try and steal it. And this is what the United States, Britain and the NATO West have been doing. And we've got to start growing up, maturing, and realize that if somebody is going to provide us with a service or a product, then we have to pay for it with something that they want.
You know, I think that America has been so propagandized. I know that Americans have been so propagandized that, I mean, if you were to say that to the average person on the street, they would be outraged, because they think that they have been fighting wars for to instill democracy, to save people from terrorism, to do this or that. And it's just not true. What you say is the absolute truth. But, like I say, the average American does not know that.
No, there's something, and I hate to say this, because the British are pretty much the same, but we do have these things that we watch, little movie clips and things like that, and this was only Americans who asked which country Mount Rushmore was in.
Oh, gosh.
These Americans knew where Mount Rushmore was. You know, this is a bit like asking a Frenchman, where's the Eiffel Tower?
Right.
Or asking an Englishman, where's the Tower of London or Buckingham Palace? And these Americans didn't know where Mount Rushmore was. They didn't know whether it was in China or in Germany or Brazil.
Gosh. Oh, my gosh.
So, this is...
Yeah,
and these people vote. This is the sad part about it. And it was a Czech politician whose name escapes me who said, really, President Obama is not the problem. The problem is the kind of people who vote for him.
Well, yeah, I think, but you also have to say, well, who put these people on the map to begin with? Who are the people that selected the candidates that the Americans are supposed to choose from? I mean, seriously.
Yeah, wasn't it President Roosevelt who said that, you know, we're selected, you know, we're not elected, we're selected.
Exactly, exactly. And,
you know, it's a Punch and Judy show, isn't it? We don't see the people with their hands in these glove puppets. So we see the Republicans and the Democrats knocking sense out of each other and knocking the brains out of each other. We're watching in Britain Labour Party and the Conservative and the Liberal Party doing the same. But it's a Punch and Judy show. What we don't see is the hands that are manipulating these puppets out of sight. And, you know, everybody thinks that we've got democracy, but I don't know. I'm not an American. You're better placed to answer me than anybody else. But I say to, if I say to a Briton, you know, tell me, what are the basic differences? We've got two parties here who are very, very much against each other. We've got the Labour Party and we've got the Conservative Party. So tell me, what's the difference? They can't answer you. They cannot tell me. Yeah. If I say to you, you know, which is the difference between this dog and that dog, you will say, well, this dog is a German Shepherd and this dog is a Dalmatian. I say, okay, tell me the difference between a Republican and a Democrat.
Exactly.
Tell me what the differences in the policies are of the Labour and the Tory party. They can't tell me.
Sure. Well, the protocols of the lurid elders of Zion say we name the presidents. In the near future, we shall establish the responsibility of presidents. By that time, we shall be in a position to disregard forms in carrying through matters for which our impersonal puppet will be responsible.
Yeah, the presidents, unless they break free from it, I do think that Putin broke free from it. To a certain extent, they're all controlled, of course. But I do think that a president, if he wants to, can impose his own will on those people who are pulling the strings. And the whole world is waiting with bated breath as to see what kind of a world we're going to have when it's President Donald Trump rather than President Obama.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Have you any ideas?
Well, I've written a few articles. One article that I wrote very shortly after, I think right after he was elected. The name of the article is "We've Been Trumped." And I really believe we've been trumped. So I think that he would not have succeeded, and I've made this statement numerous times, he would not have succeeded in the real estate business in Manhattan had he not acquiesced to the tribe and to whatever it was that they wanted. He has surrounded himself completely with the same kinds of people that he was said to have opposed prior to the election. Selection. I think we're in deep trouble.
Yeah, it could be, and I hope we're not, because if America is in deep trouble, then so is the United States, because America, I think, will try to fight their way out of the corner rather than negotiate themselves out of the corner. And it all depends on his Weltanschauung, his world view. I do think, and I think perhaps we've talked about this before, it was March, would you believe, Diana, since we last had a conversation.
Oh, my gosh.
It is that long ago, but I do think that the world has changed rather radically. We were talking about the destruction of Europe in 1944, 1945, and the destruction indeed of many other countries by NATO West, not just the United States. Now, you know, the United States couldn't have done it without the approval, or the association rather, of Britain and Germany and France. They're all in the gang together, and they have destroyed so many countries, and there are very good statistics that suggest that 30 to 40 million people have lost their lives to America and NATO wars since 1945. Now, America, because of its geographical position, has always held an advantage. Is none of those countries that it attacked and occupied were able to hit America back. That has all changed by modern technology. And the United States is as vulnerable now as Germany was in 1939. And it's interesting that America today finds itself in exactly the same vulnerable situation as Germany did in 1940-1941. To the West, Germany was trying to discourage, dissuade, put off Britain, and of course being supplied by Roosevelt's United States. They had that threat facing them through the Low Countries, Belgium and Holland, and France of course. And their great fear was, is all of the German troops were held down, keeping America and Britain and France at bay in the West. There was nobody there to protect their eastern back door. And Stalin, taking advantage of it, put 4.5 million Red Army troops ready to invade Europe through Bulgaria and through Romania and Hungary to defeat Europe while Germany was distracted by the threat from the West. And of course Hitler preemptively struck Bolshevik Russia, and they nearly got away with it as well. A pity that they didn't. Bolshevism would have ended 45 years earlier. But now America finds itself in the same position. Is whilst they are distracted with the West, with protecting, as they say, Europe, with NATO, they've got China at the back door. So the United States now has got the Chinese threat on the West Coast, and they've got the Russian threat on the East Coast, so they are caught in a vice. And I really don't know how I would advise Trump on this. They're trying, America, Washington DC, the Pentagon is trying to divide, separate the friendship, the alliance between Russia and China. They will not do it. And so the problem is that if the United States should threaten Russia from the Atlantic and from Europe, then they are going to, like Hitler, they're going to find so many troops, so much effort being put into that, that the West Coast of the United States, Los Angeles, San Francisco, right up to Portland in Oregon and further up, that's going to be unprotected from China. So the United States today is in the same vulnerable position as was the Democratic Reich in 1940.
But do you think the weaponry is the same? Don't you think that there are other ways that they are depleting the population, that there are other things that they are doing, taking production out of the country? People, you know, we don't see this on the news, but people are living in their cars, they're living under bridges, they're living in drainage tunnels and all kinds of things. I mean, there's so many other ways. And then we have the influx of immigrants, as does all of the countries in Europe. I mean, the whole world seems to be in crisis mode. It makes people feel kind of hopeless.
Yeah, it's pretty. I think the United States is vulnerable in that respect, and I have the answers to most things, but I wouldn't know how to rebuild. You know, they're talking about making, Trump is talking about making America great again.
Yeah, how's he going to do that? I mean...
Yeah. Exactly. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Deanna, you're an American and you've got your listeners, so don't let me put my foot in it. But I think it was Abraham Lincoln, who was the president, who created Liberia in the west coast of Africa to encourage the emigration of the Negroes, who the African descent people who lived in the United States at the time. And I really do think that this could be some kind of inducement to those who are not European Americans to go to countries that are more likely to welcome them.
Well, there were efforts made by several people, or suggestions made by several people, to ship the black Africans back to Africa, Liberia. But I don't know that, you know, people coming here are encouraged to come here. They're encouraged to go into countries in Europe. Because their own countries are being bombed to smithereens. I mean, a lot of the immigration, into this country is a result of warfare in other countries. And there's always a reason for immigration, whether it's famine, whether it's persecution, whether it's warfare, there's all kinds. And most of it is orchestrated. I don't think people really want to leave their country unless they're forced to by one of those reasons that I mentioned.
You're absolutely right, Diana. We have created the problem. We're talking about Syrian and North African refugees flooding all over Europe, and they certainly are. But we've got two problems here. Is this, the misplaced policies of the political elite in the European Union. They created the problem in the first place. Countries like Syria and Libya, Egypt, Tunisia, Morocco, they were very stable countries until a short time ago, and it was only because of interference from the NATO West that has destabilized them. I do remember, I've been living in Spain, I travel all over Europe, of course, I've got great connections in Russia right throughout Europe, but I remember that the holiday trade in the Mediterranean Spain was threatened by the prosperity of the North African states who are providing resorts on a par and better than the likes of Florida or Los Angeles, that area, California, and people were going there. They were abandoning places like Marbella, Costa Blanca, the Costa del Sol, Andalusia in Spain, and they were going to Morocco and Tunisia, and they're not doing it anymore because these countries have been destabilized by NATO West. Libya was the most prosperous country in Africa. Now it's the most desperately in need because of the NATO West. Syria, you are absolutely right.
All righty, we're going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Michael Walsh, and his website is spinfreehistory.com. And if you'll go there, if you'll visit that website, you will see the titles of all of his books, and you may purchase those books at Amazon. And they're all very concise and to the point, which is a good thing. It's a very good thing. You don't have to read through 700 pages of something to figure something out, right?
Yeah, thank you for the plug. It's very important you keep on mentioning the books, and you know, there is a little bit of a debate between me and my good wife. She says I've got 38 books, I say 39. One of these days I'll get round to counting them, but I'm far too busy producing the next book, so let's keep it going and let's keep... Now, I'm taking advantage of a vacuum that has been created, Diana, by the shamefulness of mass media and the palace publishers, but they have left a gap for you and me and thousands of people like us to fill with real history. And this is what we're doing. There is an insatiable appetite, Diana, for real history, not the spin of the victors, the real stuff. So, as you say, Death of a City, Uncensored Adolf Hitler. We want to know not what the Chicago Times said he said, we want to know what the man said. The Führer's Proclamation to the German People, which is not a very good title actually, because the Führer's Proclamation to the German people is his declaration of war against Bolshevik occupied Russia, and he is giving his very, very sound reasons for Germany's difficult decision to preemptively strike Stalin's Russia before Stalin's Russia struck Europe. And in 1941, Adolf Hitler actually saved Europe from occupation from the Bolsheviks. But
well,
he doesn't get any credit for it. He doesn't get any credit for it at all.
You're absolutely right. The Russians, the Soviets, were not anticipating this. They were scheduled, they were ready and prepared for an offensive war. They were not prepared for a defensive war. Really?
That's absolutely right. There was no way that Hitler's Germany had the manpower, the military means of thwarting attacks from both sides, from the United States and Britain on the one side and the Soviet Union on the other.
Oh, absolutely.
It just wasn't possible. But when you are walking down a road and you're getting mugged by three people, then, if you're a wise pugilist, then you try to disable one and then turn on the others. And this is precisely what Hitler's Germany was doing. It was being attacked by two thugs called Britain and America on the one side, and then looking over its shoulder, it found this other thug, Stalin, Joseph Stalin, the ex-bank robber, the dwarfish ex-bank robber, only 5'4" tall. He was a tiny little creature. This is why I always like to have the cameras down by his knees, pointing upwards. Pointing upwards to give the appearance that he was a big man. He was not. He was a runt. He was 5'4". He was a tiny little ugly dwarf. But Hitler's Germany, of course, saw him wading into the fight as well. So whilst they tried to keep America and Britain at bay on one side, they turned and gave this little dwarf Stalin a very, very good hiding. And the little dwarf Stalin was well on the ropes and almost beaten senseless when the United States and Britain came rushing to their aid. And of course this turned everything around.
Yes, indeed. With their Lend-Lease program.
A tragedy, Diana. It was the United States. We're all impressed when we see on, the history program and all of these things, Stalin's organs, these terrifying weapons that were devastating the German people and Europe, of course. They were all Studebaker trucks. The Russian, entire Russian army was being run on trucks that were, I don't know where Studebaker, supposedly had several plants around the United States.
Yes.
But they're all Studebaker trucks.
Wow. Okay, we'll be right back in 3 minutes. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Michael Walsh, and his website is spinfreehistory.com, and we were talking about the Lend-Lease program. And that's got a little bit of interesting history. Actually, Felix Frankfurter, who was an associate justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, wrote that program. He wrote the Lend-Lease program. And, of course, the Soviets were the biggest benefactors of that particular piece of legislation. Interesting, huh?
Yeah, another thing that is interesting, but probably won't give you very much pride, is that every uniform worn by a Red Army soldier was buttoned up by buttons made in Chicago.
Oh, I know. It's terrible. It's terrible. Yeah.
Yeah, but if it gives you any consolation at all, they would have all been walking in their stocking feet, their bare feet actually, if it had not been for Britain. Britain supplied the Red Army, there was 4.5 million in the Red Army, but Britain for some reason supplied them with 8 million pairs of boots.
Yeah.
that was while Britons were starving, while Britons were starving and going without. You know, they were pouring all of their money into saving Bolshevism, because of course it was a massive investment from the Western corporations. So it's a little bit, you know, there is no excuse anymore for ignorance. It's a matter of choice now, Diana, and there is plenty of information available. It's not opinion, it is fact. I defy anybody to go to any of the books that I have published, with one exception. I've only written one fictional book, A Leopard in Liverpool. All of the others are facts. And people, it's a free world so far, not for very much longer, but if anybody wants to dispute anything in it, then they can do, because it is all proven, it is all proven facts.
Right. There's another question or an issue. A lot of people believe that the Germans viewed themselves as the master race. And that is not true. While people, particularly in the South, were being tacked up on trees with their throats cut, and I'm talking about African Americans, were being killed, slaughtered, in Germany, they faced a different, had a different experience, correct?
Absolutely. You know, it was a completely different society, and this was why there was common cause to destroy it. National Socialism is a concept of a life changing concept, which is just as applicable now as it was then, perhaps more so now than it ever was before. So I would say that my slogan is, we're not the last of yesterday, we're the first of tomorrow.
Ah, yes, that's a good view, a good attitude. I was just during the break looking at the NSDAP 1932 economic program, and it makes perfect sense to apply this anywhere. And one of the first things that they said in the pamphlet was, unemployment causes poverty. Employment creates prosperity. I mean, it is so it is so rational. It's an obvious truth. And when we have various areas in the city, I live in the suburbs, we have areas in the city that have been deliberately made into ghettos, into areas where there is no employment, where people do not have an opportunity to get a job. Of course, that's happening all over the country because of the production being shipped out of the country through NAFTA and the politicians. But any time that you have poverty, you're going to have crime, and you're going to have hopelessness. And I mean, it just makes sense. This whole program makes such sense. The other thing, number two, capital does not create jobs, but rather jobs create capital. It's just,
you're beginning to sound like Adolf Hitler, young lady.
Oh, I know. I mean, the NSDAP program was brilliant.
And yeah. It's a very good, it's a must read for everybody, but really, as my fellow Irishman said, George Bernard Shaw, you know, we really need to just sit back. It might be lying in bed before we drift off to sleep at night. It might be while we're waking up in the morning and we're wandering, looking for a little bit of inspiration to get us on our feet. But just, instead of thinking about trivia of what we saw on the news or read in the newspaper or the magazines or cosmetics or whatever attracts the men, the latest cars, let's think a little bit about the world situation and wonder, if everybody was to say, right, I'm going to be President of the United States, or I'm going to be Prime Minister of Britain or the Chancellor of Germany, how would I handle it? And give it some serious thought, and you'll be surprised that you'll start thinking the same way as the rest of us are thinking. We're coming out of our chrysalis, and that's got to be a good thing. We're beginning to think for ourselves instead of having our thinking made up for us.
Right. one of your other books that caught my eye is the one about, let me just bring that up again here, about Churchill. He is most detestable. Oh, you know, when people laud him for what he did for their country. Oh my gosh. He was a coward, a cheat, a fraud. He was the worst thing. Oh yeah, he was that too.
He was a transvestite. And this is not me being libelous or slanderous, I should say. Now, these are facts. He preferred wearing women's silk knickers. Nobody's denied it. His family conceded as much. We do know that he was a paedophile, that all of the evidence is there. So, you know, people really need to be looking past the trivia of propaganda and looking at the reality. You know, Winston Churchill was voted the greatest ever Englishman. He wasn't English. He was half American. He was entitled to an American passport, and as far as I know, he had one. His mother was Jewish, so that makes him Jewish. So to describe him as an Englishman is as ridiculous as describing me as a Chinaman.
Yeah, just a piece of garbage. And he was, he knew when the bombing was going to start, he would leave. He would escape the city, London, and go elsewhere because London had broken the code, and they knew exactly what was going on in Germany, just as the Americans had broken the code for the Japanese, and they both. They both, Churchill and FDR, monitored the progress of the Japanese to Pearl Harbor. They knew. They provoked it. And it's just, you know, presidents that, or leaders that will allow and provoke an attack on their own people. But Churchill is
It'll give you an idea, Diana, of the power of the media to manipulate our minds, is that Winston Churchill was never very popular in England at all. He was hated and despised before the outbreak of war. He was never elected to lead Britain. He was parachuted in. And when he stood for election to become Prime Minister after the war, when one would normally expect the person who was tick-tick responsible for the defeat of Germany and the end of the war, that he would have a landslide victory. In actual fact, he had a landslide defeat. So Winston Churchill was a lot less popular in the 1940s and the 1950s than he is now. And this is all because the media has created a myth around him, just as they created in the Soviet Union a myth around Joseph Stalin. In the West, in the United States, and certainly in Britain, they have created this a person who just simply did not exist. He is a figment of their imagination. You know, Cinderella is not Cinderella. Cinderella is the ugly sister. And we've got to change perceptions on this.
Right. He was a backbencher.
About it, but you know, Winston Churchill, I've got a picture of in front of me now, you know, and he really wants me to retch. But I do make a point. Well, you know, people in the United States, they can't understand why in Russia today there are still people, and believe me, there aren't many of them, but there are still people who idolize Joseph Stalin. And well, I say, well, you know, there are people in Britain who still idolize Winston Churchill, and to be quite honest, the difference between them is really not debatable. There wasn't an awful lot of difference. You consider the destruction brought about on Europe by Stalin and by Churchill, you know, it's a bit of a debating point as to who was the worst.
Right. That is sure true.
But we're all victims of brainwashing to some extent. I certainly was until I saw the light, and I've got no doubt that you, at some part of your life, and no doubt your listeners too, you have changed your opinions. And it's a good thing to change your opinion, because as one of the great British diarists said, that when you change your mind about something, what you are saying basically is you're smarter today than you were yesterday, and that's got to be a compliment.
That's a very good way of looking at it. Yes, indeed. And I think it's important that when you've misstated or believed something and published something that wasn't true, that you take it back, that you say, hey, you know, I just was going along with the regular myths of the day. And, I mean, I published, because I started writing for the Internet back in 2005, and I swallowed a lot of the Hitler myths. And, oh gosh, I wish I could pull them back, but it'd be like trying to gather feathers in a windstorm. I mean, it's, what's out there is out there, but yes, we should learn. We should continue to do research. We should learn something every single day and learn from.
I just meaning to say, sometimes people say, well, what turned me, because I had a communist mother and father, for goodness sake. I'm the last person who should have been a National Socialist. I fell out with my father, and my mother agreed with me in the end. But, you know, this is life. You know, we don't always agree with our parents. But people say, well, what brought you around to show any sympathy at all to Hitler's Germany? Do you know who it was? And I'm being absolutely honest. When I first went to see in 1959... I was going to the United States regular. Nearly every sailor who was over 35 on the ships that I sailed on had been involved in the war, in the Lend-Lease program. They'd been on the Murmansk convoys and this sort of thing. They'd been involved in the war, and many of them had been captured by the Germans. And I tell you this, I'm crossing my heart now, I have never, ever met a serviceman who had anything bad to say about the Germans. The only people who had anything bad to say about the Germans of the Reich were people who wouldn't know a German from a Pole or from a Russian. But I have never, ever met a British serviceman, many of whom were prisoners of the Germans, who would say a bad word about them. They said they were well treated, and they were better treated as prisoners in the German concentration camps than they would have been had they been in the British barracks back at home.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, there were more American soldiers that came back. I mean, a high percentage of them came back, you know, that had been prisoners. And but that is not the case. The German prisoners were treated as slaves. They had to go in and do the most dangerous work for Britain. And of course, Stalin took a bunch of slaves. They were never seen again. And, but they did the most, they were rebuilding. And, I mean, they had to do a lot of dangerous things. You know,
they were clearing. They were clearing minefields with their bodies. They were breaking every kind of law. The Allies, you know, they just totally disregarded the law, and they were sending young surrendered German soldiers across minefields with their fields to find the minefields.
Exactly.
And they were working them literally to death. And people have got to realize this. You know, they've got to stop believing in the propaganda of the victors and start looking for their sources of information, not just on the Reich and, you know, but from everywhere.
Sure.
You know, it's so very important that they don't become reliant upon people who have lied to them about Syria. They lied to them about Colonel Gaddafi in Libya. They lied to them about everything under the sun. Are we really expected that these people who lied about everything, Hillary Clinton and everything, but they told the truth about the Third Reich? Of course not. It just doesn't make sense, does it?
No. And I think these current states that are being bombarded, being bombed, I think that people are beginning to say, well, gosh, we shouldn't have gone into this country. We shouldn't have gone into Iraq. We shouldn't have gone into Afghanistan. They're saying, well, I wonder if that's applicable to earlier wars. And certainly, the United States has been engaged in warfare since the war with Mexico. I mean, we're talking before the so-called Civil War. And even if you look at the Civil War, it was also about resources and about establishing a corporatocracy, which we have. The world is run by corporations. And when you look at the board of directors for those corporations, they have some very, very interesting names. And you just have to, it's all about money. It's all about resources. Warfare is never, never about what they tell you it's about.
No, all wars are based on the economic considerations, you know, but as I say, people don't die and they don't lose their limbs for this. But there is no excuse now. And one of the interesting things, I know that this is true of the armed forces in the United States, and it's certainly true of the armed forces in Europe, is the current generation is much smarter for very good reasons, because they have access to alternative media like you and me. They're much smarter than their mothers and fathers were, and what they're finding now is there are simply not enough young men who...
Did we lose our connection? I'm not hearing him. Are we still connected? Okay, he's having those storms, so probably it's weather-related. Okay. All righty, so we will get back, and we're in the middle of a break here. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna. We lost Michael, but we found him again. A storm must have gotten him. Okay, our guest is Michael Walsh, and his website is spinfreehistory.com. And that's what we need. We need spin-free history. And as you were saying, here we have all of these contemporary examples of how countries are just blown to smithereens, and for no reason whatsoever, but for resources and... who knows what else? Well, I think I know. And so shouldn't we apply that to every war that we've ever had? It's always about resources, about money, about power.
That's right, and it always has been. You know, of course, I've been at the barricades, as you know, Deanna, since 1968. I think I'm a little bit of a prehistoric revisionist here and now at my age, but I think it's nearly 50 years now I've been researching and working on this. And of course, I came onto the scene just after your venerable George Lincoln Rockwell was assassinated. That's how far back I go. So I'm still learning even today. I'm constantly amazed at what I didn't know before. So whoever is getting into the box now has got quite an interesting and exciting odyssey ahead of them. And I've said, don't be put off politics, you know, because it's not you. It is really one of the most exciting adventurous distractions. It can take over your life, but it is such a wonderful way of learning about how the world really works. And that's got to be much better than being distracted by the glitz and the glamour and the trivia that we have to put up with normally every day, isn't it?
Exactly. Yes. I had dinner with some friends on Thursday night, and we met at the gym, and we get together two or three times a year, and they don't read books, they read novels. And I think, I don't say anything, I mean, if that's, but I just can't believe anybody would pick up a novel and read it when there's so much truth out there. I mean, I can barely get through all the books I want to read that are factual. Why would I waste time reading a novel, honestly? I mean, maybe, I don't want to be entertained. I want to be educated.
Yeah, it's very invigorating and inspiring, you know, to open up new avenues. Not everybody is like that. We have to accept that. You know, sometimes people say there are too many chiefs and not enough Indians. I had a lady friend, and she was absolutely bright as a button. She was very, very intelligent and well-educated. But I couldn't understand why she was watching, you know, the trivias and the novels, as you say. And I said, you know, Suzanne, this is really not you. You know, you're a very well-educated intellectual one. What are you doing, you know, watching the soap operas?
Exactly.
And she said, it's a distraction from the real world.
Oh, wow. Okay, we'll be right back in 3 minutes.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. And today our guest is Michael Walsh. And he is the author of, well, 38 or... And his website is spinfreehistory.com, and you can see all of his books there, and then you may purchase them at Amazon. We're talking about, well, about trivia and about distractions, and I think that people do like to be distracted, but I wonder how they got into that kind of mode of thinking. Do you think it's the sports that were created in order to distract people? I mean, there are a lot of people who are into sports. I mean, why would anybody want to sit and watch somebody work? I don't get that at all. And I don't know. Hey, we have a bunch of phone calls. Michael, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm listening to you. Yeah.
Oh, you know, I did want to talk about the Morgenthau extermination program, but why don't we take a couple of calls? Let's take Susie in Arkansas. Susie, welcome to the program.
Hi, Deanna.
Hi, how are you?
I'm just fine, thank you. How are you doing today?
Good.
I love your guest.
I do too.
And I've got to get a hold of some of those books. I have a neighbor who's Russian. And let's see, I'd say she's probably in her late 50s, approaching 60, pretty close. And the denial of so many things that went on. But mind you, her mother was a member of the party. And this woman is a doctor who was educated for free. And my assumption is, now she is bright, but my assumption is that because mom was pretty high up in the party. What would your guest say about that?
Well, hello, Susie from Arkansas. Lovely to meet you, and thank you for your kind words. Our generations have been dumbed down, and I do think that this is a deliberate policy. I remember the Daily Telegraph, which was a very erudite British newspaper, and they published the exams that children were taking in 1908, I seem to recall, and they compared with them with the 1990s, and believe me, we're talking the children of 10, 11, or 12 year old in the turn of the 20th century, 1910, about the time that my mother was born, were far, far better educated then than the university graduates are now. They knew much more about many more subjects. And we've been dumbed down ever since, and it is shocking the way we have been dumbed down.
But very deliberate. It's been a very deliberate program.
Yes, I understand that, because I'm a product of the last of the little one-room one-room schools in the rural, where we had one teacher for all the different grades.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, when at the eighth grade there, you were so far ahead of the most of the high school students. And but I just, you know, what I fail to understand is how she knows here that we are lied to continually. What makes her think that her country was any different?
Yeah, I think that people do prefer the illusions to the reality. As I said, this lady that I was talking about earlier, there's an awful lot of them, and all of the people who watch the soaps or read the novels, they're not particularly stupid. They choose to be stupid simply because they don't want to face reality, because reality frightens them. And we're not frightened. People like you, Susie, and Diana, the rest of us, many of us listening to this program and similar programs, alternative programs, we're brave enough. We would rather have the truth, even if it's unpleasant, and deal with it than to go off into a mental fairground somewhere and be in denial. And, you know, that's the difference between us, I think.
There's also another factor, is that oftentimes the most educated you are, the more educated a person is, the more indoctrinated they are.
Yeah, yes, I was thinking that when he said his friend was so well educated. They can be, I've heard the term educated idiots.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We had a saying, a liberal is a person who's educated beyond his intelligence.
That's very good. I have a question for you, Deanna. Since these women, this is what they feed their brain, how can you handle being around them very much?
Well, that's why we only meet two or three times a year. But they do.
Oh,
they
thought it was more often.
Well, we used to work out at the gym every morning, and then the gym closed, and for various reasons, we stopped meeting at the gym. But it was just chit-chat during, you know, while you're on the treadmill or whatever. But, I mean, they do have some other very fine qualities. They have different perceptions, perspectives on things. And we've each contributed to each other in our own way. I don't bring up anything political or anything about health. They all get mammograms. They all get their flu shots. I just don't bring that kind of thing up. And one of them said that she was on Prolia because Blythe Danner, is on it. And she's educated. She's very well educated. And she doesn't listen to this program or I wouldn't be, you know, saying this, but,
right.
You know, she has a college education. She's very bright. I don't know. It's just weird. You get indoctrinated and go ahead.
I heard, I think it was yesterday, they were discussing college professors, and 90% of them are liberal, and I thought, gosh, that's really, really something.
Yeah. Yes.
It seems to me that they've been brainwashed, and what really need to do is to make these people think again, as I said earlier on in the program, is by admitting that you got it wrong. We've all got it wrong because we're all human beings. We all have our weaknesses, and I've made my mistakes in life. But you don't keep on making the mistake. You change your course, and really, basically, this is what these people should be doing. And things haven't worked out. Some people are in denial, and some people don't see the relevancy of what we're doing. They don't see how it affects them, and maybe this is something that we should be addressing. I'll give you an idea. My son, he said, "Well, Dad," he says, "I know that the Second World War is very important to you, and the Third Reich and all the rest of it. I understand that." He said, "But can't you understand that to my generation, it's like the American Civil War, it's like the Boer War, it happened so long before our time, it doesn't have any relevancy." Well, I was quite taken aback for a few moments, and then I realised later that what happened in 1940, 1939, 1945 is very, very relevant to us today. We say that the war ended in 1945. For the people of Central Europe and for the people of Russia, their war didn't end until 1990, 1991, and we are still suffering the effects of the Second World War. So yes, it does have relevancy. So we've got to impress upon people that what happened yesterday has a bearing on the way we are living today and what we're deprived of today.
Absolutely.
Not only that, the expression "he who does not study the past has no idea of the present and therefore the future."
Right.
Yeah, we've got to understand it, and we've got to see the relevancy of it more than we have. And perhaps we are the educators. We're not, you know, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but we are educators, and this is the sort of thing, the duty that we're called upon to do, and this is what I try to do with my book. I'm carrying on a baton. The people who inspired me have been kicking up the daisies for decades now, but they're living on in me, and I hope that when I'm kicking up the daisies, then the message that they passed on to me, I'll be passing on to other generations.
Sure. Well, when we know something, when a person knows something to be true, they have an obligation to share it. It's just obligatory that we share what we have learned.
Even if they roll their eyes.
Yes, and I've met a lot of eye rollers. In fact, I wrote a two-part article on the eye rollers.
Oh, really? You did?
Yes.
Bless your heart.
Better than the hair rollers, I suppose.
I guess, but, I mean, just look at what has happened since the so-called end of World War II. I mean, so many things have happened. Oh my goodness. You've had all the CIA wars. Well, the creation of the CIA, and I mean, that's not an intelligence gathering, agency. It's to create chaos in other countries. And we need to look at these, ABC agencies of the federal government and question each and every one of them and question why do they exist? Not for the individuals, not for the population, but for the benefit of the corporations.
Right.
Yes, they have gone, and it just goes on from generation to generation, and this is something that we're here to stop. And I think we, you know, in all credit to ourselves, Diana, I think that our generation is doing a pretty good job. You know, we've been up against formidable forces. When you think of the power of the media and the enormous wealth of the political elite, it was a very good Kyle Hunt, who you know,
mm-hmm.
and says that he works from his home, from a spare room in his home, he said, and yet, without any resources whatsoever, we're talking about financial and the hard resources, such as offices. We don't have any Trump Towers. I don't have any Walsh Towers. But we are causing immense problems to the people who are ruining our lives. And I'm always looking for ways in which we, David, can destroy Goliath, and I think we're doing a pretty good job of it.
I agree with you. I agree. Well, thank you, Susie, for your phone call and for your comments and questions.
Thank you for the time, Deanna.
All righty. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All righty.
Bye, Susie.
Let's take John in Texas. John, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Deanna. Hi, Martin.
Hi.
I got a question. I could talk to you guys for 100 hours, but Michael, I got a question for you. I don't know the answer to this, but what do you know about Hitler's confiscation of firearms? What do you know about that?
That's a bunch of baloney.
Is
yeah,
it?
I never caught, because the line was breaking up pretty badly, so I was only catching part of the conversation there.
John was asking about Hitler's alleged confiscation of weaponry, guns. And that is not true. In fact, there's a book written about
it. No, it's the opposite of the truth. What he did say, very similar to what the United States said, is that those who are presumed to be potential enemies of the Germany or the United States would be deprived of access to the guns. So those who had a political record of being a danger have the same laws in Britain, by the way, that everybody in Britain is allowed to have a gun. The police can't stop them unless they've got a criminal record with violence was involved. And it was the same in Germany. And in actual fact, the people of Germany were actually encouraged to belong to gun clubs, and they were encouraged more than the people of the United States were to own guns. So this is totally, as Deanna says, it is totally baloney.
Why am I not surprised at your answer?
Well, I don't know. Maybe you, you know, you understand my sympathies, but I've really been studying this subject for just under 50 years, John, and I do know I can't help you to fix your car, and I certainly can't help to fix your computer, and I can't paint a picture for your wall, but I do know what I'm talking about when most of it, it's a big story, but when I'm talking about the Third Reich, believe me, I do know what I'm talking about.
Well, I'm looking forward to visiting your website, sir.
Well, I hope you have a great time in it, and I hope we're going to keep in touch. And because this is what it's all about. We're teamwork, John. We're teamwork. If your color of the skin is yours, as George Lincoln Rockwell said, in the next war, the uniform is going to be the color of the skin. Come on, you're an ethnic European. Let's work together, the same as the others do. Let's work together as a team.
Absolutely. Well, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Happy Christmas to you, John.
Thank you,
okay,
John.
Bye, Deanna.
Bye-bye. Thank you. All righty. Speaking of the holidays, Christmas holidays, next Saturday, the RBN Network will not be live. It will be rebroadcast. And the same for New Year's Eve. So I will not be with you the next two Saturdays. So, anyway, hope you'll listen in if you have time. And I hope that everybody has a Merry Christmas. So, getting back to the Morgenthau. Oh, here we have another call. Let's take Werner in New Brunswick. Werner, welcome to the program.
Yeah, good evening, Diana, and good evening, Mr. Walsh. And there are not too many left of your caliber out on the in the media, and we appreciate it very much, and we hope that more and more people start that gain some momentum, that more and more people will start picking up on it, you know, and using the alternate media as a main source of information instead of the mainstream media or fire. Anyway, I got just a few points. And I mentioned that before. Without Blitzkrieg, the Iron Curtain would have been at the Atlantic coast.
How true.
Yeah, Blitzkrieg was lightning war because the German armed forces were so weak compared with the foe, the enemy at the time, that there really was only one way to work, and that was to follow the Napoleonic adage, is he who hits first hits twice. This is what Blitzkrieg means. You know, Napoleon coined that expression, he who hits first hits twice. Don't wait until you are attacked. And the Polish armed forces in 1939, believe it or not, were greater than those of the British Empire. So this is very, very important to remember, that the German armed forces at the time were considerably weaker, much weaker, than the armed forces of Britain, France, and Poland, they were very, very much the David, and the opposition was a Goliath, and they had to fight fast, and they had to do it with blitzkrieg.
Yeah, and then what, basically, they did not know to what extent the United States, the industrialists, had supplied already from the 20s on the Soviet Union with the equipment to build up their armament factories in the Far East. And one gentleman, a guest and a host on RBN, who mentioned that a few years ago, Hungarian George, he told about the all the military supplies that left the ports in the West Coast and that were supplied to the Soviet Union.
Gentlemen, hold those thoughts. We'll be right back in 3 minutes. All right. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Michael Walsh, and we have with us Werner, who called in. I would like to make one statement, though. The English bombed Berlin 8 times before Germany bombed London. And so Hitler really did not want a war and did everything that he possibly could to prevent a war. And John called in, the name of the book is Gun Control in Germany. It's only 48 pages. Gun Control in Germany, 1928 to 1945 by William L. Pierce, put up by National Vanguard Books. It's very good. Has the entire, version, copy of the gun law, so you can read it in English. Alrighty. Just wanted to get those things in. Okay.
Hello?
Werner, are you there? Michael,
yeah,
are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah.
Yeah, Bernard's here, and okay. I we're neither here nor there, I think.
Oh, good. Very good. Okay. Werner, you were talking about... what were you talking about?
Oh, about the massive supply for the factory,
yes.
For the arms manufacturing factories in the far east of Siberia that had been already stamped out of the ground with the help of the prison labors already
yes.
in the late 20s. And Hungarian George, George Mészáros, he elaborated on this, you know, how many ships were leaving the West Coast for Siberia with all the industrial equipment. But that is just only one thing, and you mentioned another thing about euthanasia. What I understood, it was only practiced for about 4 months, and then they discontinued that program. But there was already decades earlier the Eugenics Institute established in London, which was operating all along. And in regard
sure.
to the... In regard to gun control all over Germany, Germany was compelled by the Allies, it's a Versailles Treaty, not to have any more than 100,000 militaries. But all in every town there were gun clubs, and they held every year they held a competition, you know. So the people were well versed in handling guns. But in order to defend themselves, they were being hamstrung by the Allies in the Versailles Treaty.
Yeah, the first casualty of war is truth, isn't it? I think it was an American senator who coined that expression, which is very, very true. And, of course, the victors write the history books, and this is the reason why, if we're intelligent, inquiring adults, then we should be a little bit more discerning in what we read and what we judge.
Basically, the people in North America were treated like people on a... far in the Pacific Ocean on an island, you know, all the supplies, including, information supplies, you know, they're being all, the shipment was always controlled and the publication was controlled in North America. But many of the people from North America, after they have been over there in Europe and have been in contact with the people, they know better, and it is high time those that are still alive that they finally start speaking out, you know. Not just only, you know, for the country's sake, but for the sake of their children and their descendants, children and grandchildren. And if they don't speak out, it is outright irresponsible from them.
Yeah, it's a responsibility that we all have, isn't it?
Well, you know, particularly in Germany, because the denazification program in Germany was so pervasive. They got rid of all of the media there. They got rid of all the teachers. They burned, the Allies burned all the books that were produced from 1933 forward. And so there are people in Germany who believe the propaganda because of the pervasive media coverage, or the pervasive, they actually indoctrinated the people about what had happened. And there was a couple, okay, we're going to a quick break, we'll be right back. Welcome back, this is Deanna, and our guest today is Michael Walsh. His website is spinfreehistory.com. And let me share another website, hitlerspeaceplans.com. Thanks to Five in the chat room for mentioning that. And that is produced, created, published by a very good friend of mine, Mark R. Elsis. And he's worked long and hard on it. Anyway, we had Werner in New Brunswick. We're talking about a lot of things. So
yeah, I just made some notes and I'm jumping all over the place and I try to pick out the main points. And I just was thinking about, you know, in Germany, the dirty 20s, you know, there was starvation and basically chaos, and economic chaos that was aggravated by the financial speculators. And it came to North America about 10 years later, in the dirty 30s. Mm-hmm. And it shows how much mismanagement can screw up the economy and the welfare of the people.
Mismanagement or deliberate orchestrated policies, deliberate. I think it's deliberate. I don't think it's mismanagement.
Well, basically, shifting the capital from the hands of the productive people to the speculators, right, and whatever their agenda is.
Right.
And this is when the National Socialists came to power. What my parents told me, the farmers, they knew in the spring when they were putting in the crop what they would get for their wheat and for their rye and for their grains and for their products in the fall. For livestock, they were classes being specific classes, and they had to be paid according to that standard. You know, whereas in the United States and in Canada, when the farmers were putting in a crop, and when they harvested it and they shipped their grain, 4 weeks later, they got a bill that they still owed money to the railroad because the price they were getting for the grain didn't even pay for the transportation. You know, what a kind of screwed up economy. And whom did it benefit? The same bunch that causes all the problems nowadays. And the biggest capital, the biggest wealth of a nation is the productivity of its people, not the natural resources, which has been proven out in this kind of a way. You know?
Sure.
There must be management, maybe better management of resources, simply because some countries are doing better than others. Some countries are The people are much more prosperous, the lifestyle is much better, and yet they're basically running to a similar money management scheme. Some of this is obviously better spent. We have this same problem in Britain, where the National Health Service, the hospitals, the medical service, is the second biggest employer in the world. The biggest employer in the world is the Chinese Armed Forces, and a small country, and it is a small country, Britain, has the second largest number of employees, and yet it's one of the worst health services in Europe. So it's just down to bad money management at the end of the day.
Well, basically, it boils down to common sense. And people, they have to come back to common sense. And basically what we need is a common sense revolution.
Sure. Well,
there's an awful lot around.
Sure. Thank you so much, Werner.
Thank you, Werner.
All right. Take care.
You too. Thank you.
All right. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. All righty, let's take Andy in Texas. Andy?
Well, hi. It's really nice to hear some refreshing news from a refreshing voice. You know, we look back in time, and it seems like, you know, from 1776 we fought for our freedom, and then in 1791 it started to start changing and whatnot, and here we are where we're at today with a constitution that looks good on paper, can be used for all of these folks that need to use it, such as our politicians, but it can't be used by us in the same manner. And that's one of the big fallacies of this country, is that we have spent far too little time teaching people about what their rights are, and that's been done on purpose, just like everything else has been done on purpose, because just like the Roman Empire, somebody wants to control you. Somebody wants to take care of you, wants to treat you like this, treat you like that, or whatnot. They just want, you know, to control your life. So having said all that, when we look back at this this Holocaust, so they call it, in World War II, we can look and see, I mean, anybody who's actually done some digging and whatnot, we can find out that Hitler wasn't the guy that he's being painted to be. In fact, these guys were high tech and whatnot, and I think the world was actually afraid of them actually taking over the high tech area, and they just wanted to go in there and take what they had and say, nope, you're not going to be the ones, we are, and so on and so forth. So I mean, the fact that we've been lied to so much about our history, we have to question everything, and it's got me questioning the Bible, it's got me questioning everything, you know. So I mean, I think Americans and everybody around the world needs to question everything.
Yeah, it's about time they did wake up, Mandy, you know, and the sooner the better.
Indeed. Well, we do need to question what we believe in and test it. I mean, is it accurate? Does it make sense? Can we see replicas of what is going on now? Yeah, I mean, just what's going on in the Middle East. And seeing all these people slaughtered, having their homes demolished, Iraq was down to 4% of its electrical power. 500,000 children died during the sanctions. And you can compare that to the sanctions that were put on Germany. In fact, Germany was under sanction for 9 months after they signed the Versailles Treaty. 9 months after. And that was deliberate starvation. And when you look at any kind of sanction, if for one thing it's against the Geneva Conventions, I mean, it's against everything that's humane. And yet that is the same. You know, they use the same tactics over and over and over. We should be alert enough to recognize that these things have been used before, that we've been lied to before, and that's just the way it is.
And unfortunately, it's being done in our name, and although we are not responsible, I did see a meme on social media not so long ago, and it was an open letter to the Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia, saying, you know, please don't blame the American people for what Washington DC and the Pentagon are doing. You know, we are not responsible for what they are doing. And this, I think whoever wrote the letter, they're not just speaking for Americans, they're speaking for 550 million Europeans as well. You know, the governments of Paris and of Germany and of London and other countries, they are not speaking for us, they're speaking for themselves, and they are leading us into a war which none of us want.
Well, and thank God for these people. I mean, really, thank God for these people who have actually gotten the everything out to say, hey, please don't hold the people responsible, because that's really what's wrong with this world right now, is that our governments, for whatever reason, are either doing some kind of Hollywood production and making it look like we all hate each other, or which is what I think they're doing, or they just simply can't get along. I mean, this isn't any worse than the schoolyard bully at your school. Okay, and so one country comes up and says, hey, I can do this to you, so you better do this for me. I mean, when you get to this particular point, it is schoolyard bullying and stuff, and that's what I think the United States has gotten to, or has been at, for a very long time, including all the way back to the Korean War and whatnot. We're just a schoolyard bully, and everything's been on of aggression, and we know that we declared bankruptcy in 1933, and that put us on this war path and whatnot. I mean, it's just incredible what we're living through right now, and it would really be nice to get back to just freedom, food,
yeah,
family,
we've got to,
and fun.
We've got to work at it, unfortunately, haven't we?
Right. I mean, the average person, as you mentioned, the average person has absolutely no desire to go over to some other country and kill people. No desire
exactly.
whatsoever. And the things that they are doing, I saw an image this week that I shared with some friends. It's, you know, murder, rape, plundering are against the law. Unless you're in uniform, and then it's okay.
Somehow that works,
yeah,
huh?
What they do when they put a uniform on, isn't it?
Yes, that's what they do when they put a uniform on. They do things that are totally illegal, inhumane, immoral, but when they put on a uniform, then it's okay to do all those things that they would not dream of doing if they weren't imposing democracy or, you know, patriotism is the last refuge of the scoundrel, as they
exactly.
say.
Exactly. One of the nicest quotations I came across is, war is when people shoot each other who don't even know each other on behalf of people who do know each other but don't shoot each other.
Yeah, why don't we get get Churchill and Stalin to shoot each other, you know?
Yeah, it's very, very
well, isn't it funny that all these people who join the military, myself was included, so I'm not trying to be biased here, but we all took this oath to uphold, protect, and defend the Constitution. The Constitution says we don't go to wars of aggression, and yet we've gladly went when they've told us above our heads to go on these wars of aggression. Of course, they lied to us and told us that, oh, this is for our freedom and whatnot. But isn't that just, that's hypocrisy upon people who have taken this oath, myself included. I did the same thing. I was in the first Gulf War. I mean, I didn't do nothing to stop the war.
You didn't have an alternative media, my friend. You know, there is no excuse for them now. They know what's going on. Your generation, even my generation, didn't know what was going on. But, you know, there's no excuse for the current generation.
Indeed. Well, thank
you.
Hey,
I appreciate you guys this time. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Andy.
Thank you, Andy.
Okay. All righty, let's take Tom in Utah. Tom.
Deanna, this is Tom Rogers in Utah.
Well, hi, how are you?
Well, I'm fine, but 34 million or not right now with this cold air.
Oh,
I
it's terrible.
To ask your, you're,
terrible.
I
already
have
a phone call, I know.
Oh, you owe me more than that. You owe me your life, you know that.
Oh, okay.
we gotta keep you well and breathing. Anyway,
thank you. Thank you for your concern.
Anyway, I wanted to ask your guest if he could. I had information passed to me. I don't know if I should use her name, but anyway, she's the granddaughter of a great general from the Second World War. She ended up being raised in Chile as her father, the son of that general, was asked, well, was an operative for the CIA, and they were in the process of removing Allende, replacing him with Pinochet. But in my discussion with her, she made me believe that there was a gathering of minds in what's called Iron Mountain in about 1974. And, you know, that included the paperclip character called Kissinger. And I'm wondering if your guest knows anything about the activities of Kissinger in bringing the same genocidal programs to the America that existed in Europe.
Yeah, Kissinger, of course, was working, I think it was in a New York factory that was making shaving brushes for men, you know, so he wasn't a very well-educated person at all. And during the occupation of defeated Germany right after the war, he was elevated far beyond his capabilities, and he was given responsibility for an area. Perhaps because of his connections. Kissinger has always done very well out of his connections. He was very, very much a part of Operation Paperclip and acquiring or looting or plundering everything from Germany. And, you know, he never looked back since. But that man, Kissinger, has probably been responsible, directly or indirectly, responsible for more deaths or as many deaths as Joe Stalin.
I agree. Yes.
Well, as Deanna knows, she brought me on as a guest, and I explained this issue, which all indications are that Kissinger was party to, which is the elimination of the poorest in America. And right now, the Arctic Air, that his program is being facilitated. And anyway,
you're right.
Deanna.
Yeah, another
in fact, I got a call. Yeah, see, what he brought the same mechanisms of the gas chambers in Germany to here, but in a subtle way, and nobody knows about it. And I, in the process of trying to save a baby, I identified this problem, and my life has turned to hell since then.
Right.
But anyway, right now I'm desperately trying to get word out to the families that are being injured. You know, and the whole thing stinks of the Reich's kind of program.
Well, the Reich really didn't have an extermination program. But, you know, others have had an extermination program, such as the Morgenthau extermination program.
Yeah, as I said, we had 170 million people are being killed by government, and even if what they said was true, and let's face it, why would we believe anything that they said about the Reich now? We know that they lie, but 170 million people are being killed mostly by capitalism and communism, so let's
right.
Hear a little bit for these people, eh?
Yes, absolutely.
I use the Reich as simply the metaphor for that whole mindset.
Oh, okay. Great. Okay.
Anyway, Deanna, would it be appropriate for the tell him that my website information so he can look at it, see if he can make any connections for me?
Sure. Give your website.
Right. Okay. Gassingamerica.com. Can you hear me? Gassingamerica.com.
Gassingamerica.com.
Okay. AKA poisoning the poor.
Yes, absolutely. It's a great website with a lot of information. Thank you, Tom. We're going to a quick break, and we have two more callers. We'll be right back. Our guest today has been Michael Walsh, and we do have a couple more callers. Let's take Renee in North Carolina. Renee, real quick.
Hello?
Welcome.
Yeah, I've enjoyed this conversation. You know, it's been a very intelligent conversation, because I'll admit, even I have found a lot of alt-right radio has kind of been dumbed down. I don't know. I was glad to hear that you have not jumped with both feet on the Trump train. You know, I hope for the very best, but I find the bias where they spin whatever he does wrong, or they just don't mention it at all. They only look at the positive, not the negative. This is the kind of bias. And see, this is what gets us in trouble. Whether it's people are arguing about the right, left, capitalism, communism, Democrats, Republicans, when people use that mindset where they look with a magnifying glass for the sins on the other side and a blindfold on their side, this is the problem why we can never get anywhere. You know, I listen to much more alt-right radio, but on the other hand, I don't just go to Breitbart for my news either. I read stuff, Chomsky stuff or some really good intellectuals from the left, too. The thing is, because I've learned that the right lies, too. So you have to kind of look at it all. And I find too many people are only looking at sources from the right that will tell them. They figure out there's money to be made telling people and what they want to hear that just reinforces their own beliefs. And the thing is, until we stop this, we're not going to get anywhere.
We're running really out of time. Did you have a question for Michael? Because we've got about 1 minute.
No, like I said, I wanted to tell y'all I really did enjoy this, because I find y'all in this conversation, I haven't heard that trap that has gone so overboard recently, and I really have enjoyed it.
Well thank you so much, Lorraine.
Thank you. Uh-huh. Okay. Take care. All right,
you
I don't think we're going to have time for the last phone call. Sorry, Mark. You always have some good things to say. But anyway, so we have a minute. So what kind of good advice would you like to leave with us?
Are you talking with me or are you talking with Mark?
You. No,
okay.
We don't have time for Mark.
My advice is to keep in touch. We are teamwork. We are ethnic Europeans. Forget about being American or British or Spanish or French or German. We are ethnic. We are brothers. And, you know, let's keep it this way. You know where my website is. You know how to get in touch. SpinFreeHistory.com. Thank you very much, Deanna. You've been a wonderful, wonderful host. I know I'm not allowed to say hostess anymore. I'm going to be politically correct and call you a host. And thank you for being so accommodating for me and so helpful. It really is appreciated, not just by me, but by absolutely everybody, especially here in Europe.
Well, thank you so much for honoring us to be on the program. And take care. Have a wonderful Christmas. And bless you. Bless you for what you're doing. Thank you. Bye-bye.